Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 6:23 Irish summertime. Today is April 11th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Well, let's kick off with a look at what's been happening this week. In stock markets, we've had a whole range of markets pushing back up towards their March highs and pausing around those levels, all pretty much throughout the week. Now, as I speak, we have Wall Street down about well, 1 and a bit percent, and that's not too much to worry about because so far the reaction around these March highs has been relatively shallow. But if this turns into a really strong downward dynamic, or if it gets follow through next week on the Dow, with the Dow down 170 right now, if we get another substantial move on the downside next week, well then the people betting on a retest of the lows will increase quite substantially. But generally, what we can see here is that downtrends generally have lost momentum over the last couple of months, that those January lows have in the main held. And March saw a retest of those lows on, in a couple of instances, we saw markets dropping slightly below those March lows or below those January lows in March, but then pushing right back up again. Key instances of that were Hong Kong and Japan. And indeed, today we saw Indonesia, another failed break below that March low and pushing strongly back up into the range over the last couple of days. Rule of thumb from the chart seminar, incidentally, is that if the dynamic taking it back into the range is greater than the dynamic that took it in the initial breakout, as is the case, I think, with Indonesia, where the last 2 days have created quite a big dynamic move, then there's a very strong chance we're going to go test the other side of the range. It's very much along the lines of, in psychological terms, well, if it can't go down, it's going to go up, and let's see if it's going to go back up and test the upper side of the range. And indeed, we've seen that with the Nikkei and with Hong Kong. The HSI is actually testing the upper side of its range in here today. It was up in excess of a percent this morning, and it will probably fall somewhat next week if we do see weaker closes on Wall Street this evening. But provided that is a shallow consolidation, then the potential for an upward break increases. But the chances of markets rallying right back up to their highs, particularly those markets that have fallen the most, is really quite unlikely. We are probably in for a period of time where support just needs to be built, and we're going to see ranging phases more often than not. It's probably, or typically, I think, a baby steps environment where you would cost average by buying into reactions and lightening positions into strength, while maintaining a core position. If you search the forum, if you just go to the search engine, there are a number of tick boxes, and just untick everything except the forum and type in baby steps and hit search. It will pop up with that baby steps article that David had wrote in excess of a decade ago and updated in the last 5 years or so, where baby steps is explained in detail. But that's pretty much the story with the stock market. The markets that are outperforming right now are by and large commodity related, whether those are in South America or in South Africa. Canada has also performed quite well, or indeed the Middle East, which are also obviously fueled by that rather large amount of money being generated by the oil exporters at the moment. So those are the markets that are outperforming. The Middle East is, I think, a law unto itself because it is a relatively shallow market and it is quite difficult for people to invest there. So that has been hitting new highs for a considerable period of time. Whereas Latin America, in particular, South America, sorry, and South Africa are much more open to influence from international money flows. And since they are testing their all-time highs in here right now, they are likely to also be the relative outperformers when the liquidity situation finally gets itself sorted out. We saw this week also that Morgan Stanley's chief, as well as Mr. Blankfein in Goldman Sachs, both came out and said that they thought we were towards the end of the credit crisis, but neither would put a date on when they thought it would actually end. And that's quite heartening if we see these directors or CEOs of companies who should have a high degree of knowledge of their own bank coming out and saying that they think that the risks are waning. Well, then that is really quite positive. Looking at the bond markets, well, bonds rallied relatively well over the last couple of weeks, but they have also seen a buying climax back in January, and we have not seen treasuries pushing above those levels over the last couple of months. JGBs are a bit weaker, as are bunds, but generally this is top development, prolonged top development in the bond markets. Looking at the commodity sector, well, gold continues to pull back from those highs that we saw about a month ago at this point, or 3 weeks ago, and it increasingly looks like a medium-term correction. The same can be said for many of the agricultural commodities, where they had really aggressive pullbacks and have found support over the last week, excuse me. But it does not look like that they are capable of supporting anything more than a technical rally at this point, and we're probably in for a bit more ranging in that area. Selected industrial metals are doing quite well. You have tin, which has been the relative leader of the group throughout the last 6 months, in a tight consolidation, does look like it's going to continue to break upwards there. And copper is testing its all-time high near $4 on that US traded contract. With that news in Chile that they are running short on power and badly in need of water to power their hydroelectrics, we could see shortages in copper over the coming months, and that could easily push copper upwards to new high ground. Now, let's look at, oh, sorry, also the currency markets. The dollar is, well, continues to be really rather weak, and the pound is also following it in a rather moribund downtrend against just about every other currency. But looking at the dollar, this has been a period of time over the last month where the dollar has steadied up somewhat, but you haven't had anything in the way of upward dynamics to scare the bears here. So we could easily see further lows on the dollar index or highs for the euro going forward. Now, let's look at some of these, how this all fits into the big picture. Well, let's start with commodities. Oil continues to consolidate above $100. It hit a new high this week, and it's a very consistent pattern. And I would call into light the consistency of oil over the last year compared with how inconsistent the uptrend was after the upward break above $40 in 2004, I think. The reason it's consistent now points to a big difference between supply and demand. Now, I won't speculate on where that demand is coming from, whether it is speculative interest entirely, or whether it is purely because of increased demand from the progressing economies of Asia. But nonetheless, oil is in a very consistent uptrend. So it does now appear that $100 is the new floor. But this is a secular bull market. And it is, I think, a very good example of just how far a key commodity to just about every economy in the world can move when you have billions of people in Asia entering the middle classes or entering the global economy as consumers. At the moment, those people consume as a per cap in on per capita basis far less than we do in the West. While they're approaching parity in some of the industrial metals because China and India are importing just so much of the stuff, they are so far behind us in terms of oil consumption per capita or in terms of how much food that they consume that there is massive room for those people to be consuming more, and they will be consuming more as time goes forward. Over the last 3 or 4 months, we've seen a huge inflow of money into the agricultural sector, and universally, just about every agricultural commodity was in a spectacular uptrend. About 3 weeks ago, they all topped out around the same time. Now, corn and rough rice were able to maintain those uptrends, but we saw a whole host of the other grains and coffee and cocoa losing that upward momentum, and it appears to be moving into a medium-term correction. The inflationary problem that we have with higher food prices and higher energy prices isn't something that central banks can do a whole pile about. Of course, one of the problems being that price controls right across the Asian region are helping to stoke demand, but they can't release those price controls either because then they would have food riots because the price of food would go up so much. So there is a bit of a catch-22 in there for a number of Asian governments. But what we have seen is that speculative interest has pulled back. And if these commodities, particularly the agriculturals, are in a medium-term correction, well then food price inflation should start to moderate a number of months forward. The other big market in commodities are the industrial metals. Now, nickel and zinc are clearly in base formations at the moment, and they don't give us any indication just yet that those base formations have completed. But when you look at commodities such as copper and tin, copper is reassert does look pro are about to reassert its overall uptrend, and tin has been leading the way all along. It has been dangerous over the last 5 years to write off the commodity sector because one commodity or another is in a medium-term correction. This is a secular bull market, and it is a bull market that applies to all commodities, but it needn't necessarily apply to all commodities at the same time. So some commodities will be in medium-term corrections or in base-building formations following rather aggressive pullbacks. And this sector is very prone to aggressive pullbacks where they can write off 50% of spectacular gains that they've posted. And we've seen that on a number of occasions. Another consistency is that we have seen, particularly the industrial metals, consolidate for upwards of 2 years before then exploding upwards in an acceleration that takes many by surprise. And we've seen that on so many occasions over the last 5 years that it shouldn't be that surprising, but we need to treat every commodity individually and assess every trend as an individual. They all have their own genetic identity and their own consistency, but commonality is a very, very useful tool in this regard. With the enormous number of people who are entering the global marketplace as consumers and as workers, it's changing the world we live in quite dramatically. This is the biggest urbanization in history, and it's a one-off. It'll probably last 30 or 40 years from beginning to end. And we are, I don't think, even halfway through it just yet. There are vast numbers of young people that need to be housed and educated and employed right across the developing world, from the Middle East to India and China. And new cities, new industries have to be built to accommodate them. Nobody wants a situation where you have vast, vast numbers of young people sitting around with nothing to do, because that is the type of activity that starts wars. When you have lots of young people around and nothing for them to do, countries generally tend, at least historically, to get themselves into trouble. So infrastructure growth right across the world is continuing apace. And of course, in the developed world, in the US and in Europe, infrastructure is badly in need of repair and complete overhaul in a number of instances. And we can anticipate that infrastructure globally will continue to be a key theme. So that does mean that iron ore, cement, and the industrial metals will be key growth stocks going forward. It also means that with demand for so many commodities pushing upwards, inflation is likely to become a problem or a relatively persistent problem going forward. So right now we have inflationary pressures coming from the energy complex and the agricultural complex. Of course, inflation is also becoming a problem because central banks have been printing money with abandon over the last 20 years. We had the Asian financial crisis, Russian debt default, Y2K, 9/11, even the medium-term correction we saw last year in May, and we have had massive injections of liquidity to stem the liquidity crisis from August. And this large amount of paper that is being created is helping to debase currencies, and it's a competitive devaluation because we don't have a runaway downtrend in the dollar. Now, yes, the dollar has lost a lot of its value over the last 3 or 4 years, but it hasn't been an acceleration in the same way that we've seen, for example, bank shares accelerating downwards over the last couple of months. And that's because for every dollar that the Fed and the Treasury are producing, the Eurozone and the Bank of England and just about every central bank is creating a counterpart. Because in the competitive world of globalization, there is no country wants a strong currency or will tolerate a strong currency for a prolonged period of time. That means that the central banks are essentially hoodwinking investors because there is secretive or tacit inflation in the system already, with powering commodity prices that will eventually become a problem. Of course, inflation is not going to be a problem all of the time. It will be a problem some of the time, and secular bull markets don't unfold in a linear fashion. So we will go through periods where inflation is more of a problem, and then we'll go through periods where it's less of a problem. And when it's less of a problem, we can expect equity markets to perform really rather well. But you might say, well, inflation is a bit of a problem now, and we don't have rising government bond rates. The liquidity crisis does look like it has lengthened the cycle for government bonds. Government bond yields appear to have bottomed around 2003 in the US. And when you look at that very long-term chart, and we have, I think, almost 50 years of 10-year government bond data in the chart library, and I would certainly encourage people to go look at it. But it shows a massive run-up in yields in the 80s when inflation really did become a very, very extreme problem. And in that type of situation, central banks appoint people like Paul Volcker, and they squeeze the liquidity or the excess inflation out of the system. And right now, we are in a situation where liquidity is being pumped into the system at an aggressive rate, and rates have been cut really rather aggressively. And they are, for the moment, ignoring the inflationary pressures because they're terrified of deflation. Deflation has always been, at least in the last 20 years, something that central banks have been very scared of. Following the situation that developed in Japan after their bubble burst in property and in the stock markets, central banks have been at pains to avoid the deflationary pressures that Japan has endured and is only now really emerging from. They know that they have tools that can be employed to contain inflation. And they don't have the same type of tools to contain deflation, so they're willing to ignore inflation for the moment. But inflation will become a greater problem further down the line. When this liquidity crisis has ended, we can anticipate that government bond prices will decline rather significantly, and we'll probably get a run-up in the in government bond yields. One of the reasons, of course, that government bond prices are so strong at the moment is because of something that I've referred to as model myopia. When we look right across the credit markets, you see that the way that they're priced is through various different models. And it is unfair to assess all of the bonds in issuance based on the price of the insurance against their default. It's remarkably unlikely that we're going to see a huge number of defaults. Now, certainly the number of defaults is likely to rise because we have come from a very low base in the number of defaults. But assuming that the risk of default for every company has risen dramatically, I believe is incorrect. This has pushed the spreads on even investment grade or highly rated corporate debt to extremes. And because those spreads have risen so much, and because we've had a general amount of fear in the market, people have been parking their money in treasuries because there you get a guaranteed return. We got to to a situation where inflation-adjusted treasuries were, or TIPS, I should say, were at negative yields for a period of time, which is a ridiculous situation and speaks of an overreaction. When I believe, at least, when the liquidity situation finally gets itself sorted out, we will see bond markets returning to something more normal. And while the liquidity crisis has lengthened the base formation that we're seeing on the government bond yields, I think it is inevitable that we will eventually see an upward break from this base and a move back into a situation where the response to the inflation that is creeping in the system will eventually have to be dealt with effectively. But as I said, inflation will not be a problem all of the time, and when it is not a problem and rates are being cut, then equities should do really rather well. The moribund way that the financial sector has been dealt with over the last year is certainly going to weigh on those indices that are heavily weighted by the financial sector. But as long as liquidity starts to flow once more and the cost of capital begins to come down somewhat from the rather extreme levels it is right now, we can anticipate that liquidity will start to flow back into those assets that are, well, as they say, I think as Warren Buffett says, when the tide goes out, it's only then you get to see who's been swimming naked. And all those people with their clothes on, for example, those resources markets, or indeed the Indian banking sector, for example, should do very well once liquidity becomes more available. On the other hand, it does look like we're going to see a prolonged base formation or support building phase for a number of those financial shares. Their business model has more or less been broken. But it is probably inevitable that they will be able to recapitalize themselves over time, and they will come up with a better business model going forward. The commodity sector would be a very obvious way for banks to move into another asset class. It's certainly been the housing market was the vehicle for the last 6 or 7 years. Prior to that, it was technology. Commodities are definitely the I suppose the fashionable or the trendy or the most notable of stories out there at the moment, and I wouldn't be at all surprised to see banks moving into the commodity sector aggressively over the next decade or so. But once banks have built themselves a new business model, and I don't know what that's going to be, But we've seen that you had the Asian financial crisis and the savings and loan crisis back in the 90s and back in the 80s. And it seems like every 10 years or so, the banks get themselves into trouble and have to recapitalize and change their business models, find something else that they can sell to punters and get themselves moving once more. I don't doubt that that's going to be the case again. But it does look like we're going to see a prolonged basing phase in those financial shares. When we start to see the banks starting to outperform the market once more on at a basis that lasts for more than a week or so, that's going to be a very important signal. It was a very important signal back in 2003 with the Japanese banks when the banks started to outperform the Nikkei and the TOPIX, and it's likely to be just as important a signal going forward with a number of these other indices. So that is definitely something to keep an eye on, and you can use the filtering system in the chart library to filter the various banking sectors. Just put them all into a section in your favorites, and you can easily filter them for the best performers relative to any global index. Looking at the currency markets, well, longer term, no country wants a strong currency, as I mentioned already. But in the Asian region, you have a period of time that over the last decade, currencies there have been massively undervalued, and you've had a large number of countries deliberately devaluing their currencies. Well, that's changing somewhat because it's now in their interest to have a slightly stronger currency. This week alone, you saw the Singapore dollar moving to a new high against the dollar, and the renminbi in China moved below 7 or moved above 7 for the first time, below on the chart. So it's strengthening. And this is important because this is also a secular theme. For the long term, the Asian currencies are very likely to appreciate over the next 10 years or so. And countries like Singapore have already got a strong currency, and it's already back towards those highs prior to the Asian financial crisis. But other countries have a very long way to go. India, for example, the rupee was in a downtrend for an extremely long period of time, based out over a couple of years, well, over 3 or 4 years, and is now starting to break upwards once more. This is a secular move, and the rupee is likely to get stronger over the next decade and progressively stronger year by year. The reason this is important, of course, is because with that massive amount number of people entering the global marketplace, GDP growth leading the world, corporate surpluses or corporate profits rising, capital and current account surpluses in the Asian region, as well as appreciating currencies and greater liquidity moving towards the Asian region generally, well, this is all very positive for investors who are seeking to invest in that area. And with that, I will leave you for the weekend, but thank you very much for your time and have a great weekend.